Reporting from a very festive and joyous home, I'm Marion Callahan, and in today's podcast, we'll talk to Connie Iannetta, who will be celebrating a very special Christmas this year. Now, the holidays haven't always been easy for Connie. She was placed in foster care just shy of her 12th birthday.
It was really difficult for me because I kind of felt caught in a little bit of a tug of war between my biological family and my foster family. They both wanted me for the holidays, and I felt like I had to choose one or the other.
And how did they differ?
My family's annual tradition was more dysfunction and chaos, not quite what my foster family's was, which was more perfect, I guess, the image of perfection. They did, you know, all the family hoopla and the cookies and hot cocoa and everything like that. They were great and everything, but it wasn't my family. It wasn't my biological family. It wasn't my mom and dad. So
dispel, if you could, some of the misconceptions that some people have about teens in foster care or people going into foster care.
I think a lot of people feel that the immediate reaction is, well, when people meet me, their immediate reaction is, oh, you were in foster care because your parents were in jail or on drugs. And that I get a lot. But that's not always the case. I mean, I feel like most people think it's abuse or neglect, but there's so many other reasons that kids end up in foster care. It can be poverty, mental illness in the family. It can be the physical illness or something. And the biggest thing is it's not the kid's fault most of the time. I mean, a lot of times kids catch a bad rap for being a foster child. You know, they're the dysfunctional kid, the delinquent, the bad seed. And a lot of times they're in foster care for reasons that aren't their own at all.
And from our conversations in the past, you mentioned that aging out has its own share of struggles.
Aging out is a way that a lot of child welfare employees and advocates and alumni that we refer to a young person leaving the foster care system without permanency. Permanency being a forever family, whether it be reunification with their biological family, whether it be guardianship or adoption. So I aged out at 18. So on my 18th birthday, my belongings were packed and I was out of my foster home. So on that day, I aged out.
And what are some of those needs that are missing? I mean, even today, with all we know about the foster community.
Number one, I think absolutely mentors. Just, you know, strong, natural supports in their lives that can help them, you know, just develop the skills, the coping skills and everything else that they need to be successful, you know, members of society and everything. Also resources for housing, resources for jobs and careers and for school. I just felt like I was flailing so much in my early 20s and after exiting care, just with, you know, when I entered college, financial aid forms or learning about building credit. I mean, all those things were so lost. Like, I was so lost trying to navigate that. And we really need to help these young people develop the skills that they need, primarily, hopefully, before they exit care. That way they can be successful, thriving adults.
One thing that drew me to your story was that you faced all of those challenges. You didn't have those supports. You were on the brink of homelessness. And in the face of surveys and statistics, which I know you like to avoid, you defied the odds. Tell me, what was within you? What were you thinking of at the time when you said, that is not going to happen to me?
Well, I know for me, I had heard a lot of the statistics, you know, foster kids get pregnant right out of care. Foster kids go to jail. Foster kids, you know, end up homeless. Foster kids fail. You know, like, I mean, there's this general, I guess, language that is negative. And I feel like hope is something that you really need to hang on to, you know, as a foster youth, as an alumni. I mean, that is what keeps you going. So for me, it was always important to just take that out of my own dialogue so I could help inspire young people. And also, I mean, if we went by like ACEs scores or, you know, the things that may have been traumatic in my life, if I, you know, was checking off all the things on the list, I'd be destined for failure. And clearly that's not the case. You know, I must be the exception then.
You didn't just, you know, hold on to hope for yourself, but you created hope and a future for a few others.
none of the things that have happened in the past couple of years, I mean, it wasn't planned, but it was definitely welcomed and very much a blessing and everything. But shortly after my husband and I were married, we had just bought our first home and we had a beautiful, beautiful wedding. I think our plan was to, take a honeymoon to Italy, because neither of us had ever gone overseas or anything or outside of the country. And we, not long after, got a call asking if we would do kinship foster care for a relative child on my husband's side of the family. And kinship care is actually when you care for a relative. So, and that was something, I mean, I'm familiar with kinship care. I'm obviously familiar with foster care. My husband and I, we did discuss it at length, but it wasn't really something that we, I don't think we ever considered not doing it. I mean, it was family. We both have a big, strong duty and love for family. And so we dove headfirst in the 60-day emergency kinship certification and, you know, the physicals and the, you know, handing over everything, you know, our financials, everything to become certified to care for this tiny toddler. And we're suddenly parents. We went from, you know, happy hours with our friends to, you know, going out shopping at Target twice a week for sippy cups or whatever theme the daycare decided that week. So, and I found a lot of support in, the alumni community, like the other former foster youth. I mean, they were sending me Amazon packages and stuff. That's when I learned what a boppy pillow was. Lots of things. I mean, it was just really, really nice. Yeah. And my village came through full force.
Instant motherhood.
Yes.
And then instant motherhood of multiples. Tell me more. Yes. What came next?
So, at that time we were fostering, and then it was a little boy. A year later, his baby sister was born, and we had just started the adoption process for him. So he was in the process of becoming our legal son. And his baby sister was born, and she came to us and was placed with us at a week old. So then we had two kids. And so, you know, initially with the toddler, we're like, wow, like, we're great at this parenting stuff. We're buying cute clothes, and, you know, he sleeps through the night. Like, this is easy. But then with his sister, we had a baby. So we jumped right into sleepless nights, bottles, late night feedings.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it was definitely a huge change, but we welcomed every second of it. I mean, we really, we had a great time just, you know, navigating everything. We were sleepy, but we were happy.
But your adventure was just getting started.
We received another call asking if we would do kinship, this time for one of my family members, a relative that was a teenager. And so we then had two toddlers and a teenager in our home. And then we were getting situated and, you know, trying to navigate, you know, what comes with that. And 2 days later, definitely a huge surprise to us, but we found out we were expecting our very first biological child.
And why was that a huge surprise?
Brian and I, well, there's definitely some back and forth over just being a parent in general. I mean, I don't think early on I ever expected to be a parent myself, because of my own system involvement and just fear of repeating the cycle that had been in my family. But early on with Brian and I, we had definitely had some issues with having a child biologically and everything. So the doctors had told us it wasn't an option. It wasn't going to happen. So here we are. We had just adopted two, and then we'd taken a third, and now we have a baby on the way. And I'm like, wow, we have all these kids. We've been married 4 years, and we have four kids. We're going to end the year with four kids. So, yeah, it was definitely oh my goodness, such a surprise, but it definitely was the best Christmas blessing we could have asked for.
How does your history in the foster care system affect how you parent today?
Well, now that I have kids, there are times when I can be a very overachieving parent. Like, I set the bar really high for myself. Our family calendar is color coordinated. I never miss a themed event at the daycare or any of the schools. I think as time goes by and, you know, I get more comfortable in my role and as a parent and, you know, as a wife and everything, I think some of that anxiety is lessening, and I'm starting to just kind of go with the flow, because, I mean,
with one or two kids, you can be that, like, overachieving mom. But once you hit three and four, I mean, that goes out the window. Like, I'm at the bus stop in winter with flip-flops on or messy hair. I mean, it just happens. So perfection isn't really the goal anymore, and flaws are okay. I don't know. I hesitate to say, like, any of us are a foster care success. I think we just landed on our feet. Like, we were very lucky. I don't want to say success because, you know, it doesn't mean it erases the trauma we've been through. Trauma is also something you never age out of, just like foster care. We just learn to develop healthy coping skills and healthy relationships, and we learn to kind of find mentors and friends and everything that we can lean on in times when we need to.
So what holiday traditions are you creating?
One thing this year, we're all doing matching family t-shirts for a photo, and the kids have matching jammies because I was like, we're going to cheese it up this year and really overdo it. So, I mean, that's stuff I love to do, the milk and cookies, you know, and it's not just the holiday celebrations. I mean, every night when we put the little ones to bed, we do the evening prayers, but we also sing songs every night, Brian and I, with the kids before they go to bed. So, I mean, that stuff, that brings me joy. It brings us joy. So we are very, very lucky to have a really, really cool group of kids. I mean, I always say, like, we have the best kids. They're fun and they're quirky and they're smart. And, you know, it's just fun to have the honor of being a parent, you know, and watching them grow up. Plus, we're young, so we can keep up with them. They have a lot of energy.
Right. And then, you know, they'll, you know, obviously pick up your traditions and, like you did, create their own as well.
Yeah.
What would you tell other teenagers who are aging out?
One, I think a big fear, a common fear with foster youth is that they're going to repeat the mistakes of their parents or repeat the cycle. The other thing is, like, I would just say, you know, you're not destined to be your parents or anyone. I mean, you can create your own destiny. The other thing is, being in foster care, it's not like a black stain on your future. You know, I mean, I can name hundreds of former foster youth that are successful. Don't lose hope. I mean, hope is like the one thing that you have to hold on to. Don't listen to the sad statistics. Don't listen to people who say you can't do it or you can only do this. The sky's the limit. I mean, there's people from all walks of life that achieve great things. So I would definitely say don't lose hope.
Well, our time is almost up, but I wanted to thank you, Connie, for sharing your story and reminding us of the importance of hope.
My mantra is foster strong.
Well, keep fostering strong and have a Merry Christmas. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in.